Amy, on this podcast, we try to always offer useful takeaways. And if you learn nothing else from us, learn this useful parenting lesson by Pampers Cruisers 360.
Pampers Cruisers 360 are the ultimate parent hack, the best diaper to use as soon as your baby starts standing or walking. Instead of ordinary diaper tabs, they have a unique 360-degree stretchy waistband that moves with your wild child.
Pampers Cruisers 360 makes it so easy to change your baby. Who probably doesn't stop moving just because they need a diaper changed? Just slide on to apply and away they go.
And fear not, parents. Pampers Cruisers 360 offers an up to 100% leak-free fit. And they just got even better with a new blowout barrier. Need we say more?
For trusted protection, trust Pampers, the number one pediatrician recommended brand. Download the Pampers Club app today and earn Pampers cash. Then redeem your Pampers cash for exclusive Pampers coupons, savings, and rewards.
Only redeemable via Pampers Club. Pampers cash has no cash value.
It's pretend, okay?
What fresh hell?
Laughing in the face of motherhood. Your husband is dead, Marie. With Margaret Apples
and Amy Wilson.
Norma Nurscher.
A podcast that solves today's parenting dilemmas
so you don't have to.
Oregon. Oregon? Oregon. Origami?
Hello, everyone, and welcome to this episode of What Fresh Hell, Laughing in the Face of Motherhood. This is Margaret.
And this is Amy. And this week, we're talking about imaginative kids. I love this topic. This is a great idea suggested by Chris in Cortland Manor.
Can I just say, having an imaginative kid, that I suggested the title Imaginative Kids, if you must.
Right. If you must have one.
It's not always a picnic, these imaginative kids.
This is like, I did so much research on this. This was such an interesting idea. And we love getting topics from our listeners. So keep sending them. You can send them to questions at whatfreshhellpodcast.com, like Chris did. So Chris says, our five-year-old has a huge imagination and has for years. I'm wondering if it's too big. One example, she was catching lightning bugs and started telling me each of their names, and she seems to genuinely believe the stories. The problem is that this year when she was in kindergarten, she started telling her classmates about leprechauns and zombies who can sneak into homes. Just FYI, the leprechauns can sneak in through the radiators, apparently, and zombies.
Guys, come on. This is essential. Don't ever tell us this podcast didn't give you essential information.
Kids, if you're listening with mom, this is just pretend. She says the leprechauns can sneak in through radiators and zombies like Santa, apparently, which I didn't know.
That is surprising for the undead, I would say. I am surprised that they are still on the good list.
Of course, she says. That's how they get in, like Santa does. So Chris knows a lot about leprechauns and zombies, but what she wants to know from us is how much imagination and creativity is healthy, and does it ever reach a point where you need to sort of shut it down?
So, Amy, this rarely happens, but I will give you a little behind-the-scenes glimpse. Amy was researching this topic and kept texting me to be like, OMG, there is so much interesting stuff on this topic. And I know a few things about this topic because I have done some Googling because I have somewhat of the same problem. And so I know a couple of things about this topic, and I think there's a lot of weird and interesting stuff that we're going to discuss today.
Yes. All right. So let's talk about how kids imagine, like how this sort of comes out. I mean, they might be doing it the whole time and they're just not telling us because they're babies.
Okay.
But you can see it. Psychologists sort of say like around two, when they start making their toys talk to each other, when they start to animate their toy or their stuffed animal and make it like, you go over here. No, I don't want to. That's the imagination sort of flowering for the first time.
Okay.
And then when they're like 3 to 6 years old, that's when they're acting out. No, we're pirates. Now we're this. We were talking about this a couple of weeks ago, how the way they play together is so convoluted and confusing to adults, and it does not follow adult rules at all because everything can be true, right?
And yet has like extremely clear strictures for themselves.
Yes. Yes. And that's why it's better to just let it happen.
Right.
And then
they're like, no, mom, that's not how the zombie wants his mac and cheese. Yeah.
Yeah. And then by the time they're 6 to 9, then they start imagining worlds. And that, to me, that's the sort of peak Pokemon memorizing, right? Or my kid used to play with something called Moshi Monsters. Moshi Twilight was one of our sponsors, but Moshi Monsters, which still exists, is like a it's kind of like a Sims for little kids. And you make your monster's room and you feed it and you do this. And he got like way into the land of Mashi monsters being a real thing and crying when we go away on vacation that his monster was going to die. And my sister right. was like logging in and feeding the monster for him.
Right.
Really went down that rabbit hole.
And what age is that?
He was in first and second grade at the time.
Okay.
And then, you know, and then beyond, then like school starts to get more demanding. Peers start to think maybe it's a little bit weird if you want to talk about Mashi monsters too much or Pokemon. Right. And you know, the world sort of says, okay, enough of that.
Yes.
And most kids sort of, it quiets. And for some kids, it doesn't. So we'll talk about that. But that's the sort of like how this tends to roll out.
Yes. I'll be interested in that second part of that conversation. Kids for whom it does not quiet.
But imagination is like, that kid's imagine is a good thing. Psychologists yes. seem to think that of course, I mean, it's something all kids do and that it's a good thing. It's essentially positive. There's a guy named Dr. Paul Harris who wrote a book called The Work of the Imagination.
Okay.
And his sort of life's work is about how imagination for kids is work, is making sense of the world. It's part of their cognitive structuring, I guess.
I mean, not having done any research on this really at all in preparation for this episode, I would say there is a clear developmental role that is played by imagination. I mean, that seems extremely clear from having dealt with children.
Did you ever have an imaginary friend when you were little?
I did. I really wanted, I feel like I was always like a comically oriented person in that I feel like I had an imaginary friend. Like I thought imaginary friends seemed really cool.
Yeah.
And so I invented one and I talked a lot about her, but I did not actually, she did not really spring from my imagination.
Yeah, you supposed.
I was like an observer of the idea of an imaginary friend. And therefore, in order to be on stage, I talked a lot about my imaginary friend.
You will probably not be surprised to hear I had two imaginary friends.
Do you know their names?
Yes. Oh, I had a check with Nancy Wilson about this. I remembered one, but not. I always remember Kathy and I forget Susie. I don't know why. Susie's just.
Oh, poor Susie.
Yeah.
Just left to the graveyard of childhood memories.
So Kathy and Susie, they were my imaginary friends. And the story goes that when I was about 2.5, I told my parents that they were coming over for dinner that evening. And
okay.
And they were like, okay. And they were, you know, loving and indulgent parents. So
you're how old?
2.5.
Oh, wow.
And my dad was like, okay, I guess we better go get them. And I was like, okay, let's go. So he, you know, he puts me in the car and we're driving around our town in New Jersey at the time. And he said, I was like, make a left. I think it's up there. Okay, go over there. And he let me sort of say which way to go for about, you know, 20 minutes and we drove around our neighborhood. And then finally I was like, oh, wait a minute. I think they're getting a ride to our house. And we went back to the house and they were there for dinner.
Okay. First of all, hats off to Jim Wilson. Yeah. Like what a move.
They went with
like,
it.
Wow. He really indulged
yeah.
this.
Mm-hmm.
I enjoy that. And then they were already there.
Yeah.
And did you talk to them during dinner and stuff?
I really should have gotten Nancy on the phone for this one. I don't think I talked to them. I just was more like they're here now, like just FYI, they're with us. And they were my companions.
I have a story of this. Again, I don't think I really was an imaginative kid. And now I'm a writer and I come up with stuff. But it's interesting. I don't think of myself as a super imaginative person. Like, I'm not a daydreamer. Like, that's not my thing. But at some point, I was talking to my mom, who I'm sure was in her 70s at the time. And I was asking her for her computer password. And I was like helping her, you know, of course, like figure out something on the computer, as one does. And I said, well, what's your computer password? And she's like, it's Norma Nurscher. And I was like, I don't understand that word you're saying. She's like, Norma Nurscher? I was like, what? Norma Nurscher? And she's like, I'm like, what does that even mean? She's like, oh, it's my imaginary friend's name from when she was 2 years old. Norma Nurscher. Norma Nurscher was her librarian friend. And that was my mom's imaginary friend from the 1930s, Norma Nurscher.
Wow.
And she just announced her name in her 70s as if like, oh, it's Norma Nurscher.
And like your world was like, my mother was a child with an imaginary friend. Did you telescope out?
And that just this person was still so alive to her that she said her name as if like it was a completely That's normal so cute. Thing to say out loud. It was stinking adorable.
Do your kids read the Charlie and Lola books or watch the television show? Lola has an imaginary friend.
Never heard of it.
It's a British TV show. Adorable. Very, very.
We only support American TV shows in this house, Amy.
Shop American.
Shop American.
I love Charlie and Lola. And she's, you know, it's like big sister, little sister. And she's super imaginative, Lola. And she has an imaginary friend named Soren Lorenzen. So I think there must be some rhyming thing.
Norma Nersha, Sorma Lorenzen.
Yeah, Soren Lorenzen. And he's the way that the cartoonist draws Soren, he's invisible. Like it looks like Wonder Woman's invisible plane. Like you can see him, but he looks like he's transparent.
Oh, that's awesome.
And he always does. Like she didn't want to unwrap Charlie's birthday present before he even got to open it. But see, Soren Lorenzen did it, really. It's all that kind of stuff.
Oh, well, speaking of books, our favorite books this year are called Dory Phantasmagoria. Do you know those books?
I've heard of them, yeah.
I mean, they are genuinely LOL. Like, I can't think of another book that I have read with my daughter where we're just dying laughing the whole time. And she has she's like the annoying younger sister to a brother and a sister. And it's all about this imaginary life, but it's kind of dark and weird. And it's like all her imaginary friends are kind of scary, but they're hilariously scary. Like one of them is like called Mrs. Gobblegracker, and she's got like sharp teeth like needles and she eats children. But she's just like, by the end, she's like, Dory's so annoying that she just ends up like driving them away because they can't stand her. It's so funny. Dory Phantasmagoria. They're amazing stories.
All right. Check them out. Well, here's what I wanted to say about imaginary friends that I found in this research that I thought was fascinating. So there's a psychologist named Dr. Marjorie Taylor. She's a psychologist at the University of Oregon, and she has made it her life's work to study.
At the University of where?
Oregon. Oregon? Oregon. Origami?
Oregon? I would say Oregon.
Oregon. She has been studying kids and their imaginary companions. That's her thing. Like, she studied specifically this for
decades. As my grandma Conroy used to say, there's a lid for every pot. There's a study for every professor. Studying imaginary friends. What a world.
This is a rabbit hole I could go down. So anyway, she says that about 65% of kids under 7 report having had one. And this is if you include, you know, my stuffed animal's name is Barry and he would like more juice. She said, if it's literally like this invisible person standing next to me is here and it's Mrs. Gobbledygook, that's about 35% of kids.
Okay.
And people always go to her, concerned parents, saying like, I think this is a little too real. I think I worry about this.
Right. They're way down the rabbit hole here.
Yeah. And she is quite certain that even kids who spend a great deal of time investing in playing with these imaginary friends, talking about them, driving around the neighborhood to get them for dinner... Even the kids who are...
She doesn't say that's a bridge too far.
No,
driving
no.
around the neighborhood. She's like, still fine.
She would say that even that 2.5-year-old me knew that they're not real. And the reason she knows, this is the part that I love, is that because she interviews these little children and she asks them all these questions about their imaginary friends for her research, or her researchers do as well. And something about the adult with the clipboard, always, sooner or later, the kid will self-disclose. Like the adult's asking them a lot of questions about Soren Lorenzen and writing down all the answers. And invariably, this child will say, you know, this isn't real, right? You know, I just made him up. Like they sort of get a little weirded out that the adult is taking it. Yeah.
They're weirded out. They're like, you're taking this a little too seriously.
You have a clipboard out, right? You're writing down everything I'm saying. Right.
Dude, relax. I'm just spitballing here.
Yes. I love this notion that the three-year-old's like, it's pretend, okay?
You seem a little too invested in this lady from University of Oregon.
Yeah. And that is, I'm kind of giving the ending away here, I guess, but I looked into, because Chris was asking and I was interested, like, is there a downside to imaginations and over-imaginations? And the truth is that psychologists used to think, yes, like, okay, that's enough of this. Grow up now. You're a big girl now. And now they say, absolutely not. There's no downside to this, because even the kids who are down the rabbit hole of this is my land understand. They understand in some sense that it's not real.
That's interesting. I mean, I think there is an understandable reason why we think it's a downside, because it seems kind of isolating. It seems like you're in your own world.
Yeah.
And we kind of want you to be in the world of the people
yeah.
and the small children that are around yeah. you. And sometimes the imagination is shared. Like my little kid is somebody who's very, I mean, she's got the whole playground organized around searching for fairy dust. This is her obsession right now, is finding the magic wishing stone that the fairies have.
Did she make that up? The magic wishing? Did she read about that in a book or is that a
phrase? Oh, no, I think she's made it up.
Wow.
But there's a tree at their school. They have like a kind of a blacktop playground, but there's one tree and that's where the fairies live. And she's got like 19 other children invested in how they are going to trap the fairy out of the tree to get the magic wishing stone. And then every day, whenever we talk about problems, she's kind of like, well, yeah, I mean, but when we get the magic wishing stone, we get her brother's very insistent. We get a dog. And if you've listened to this podcast, you know how that's going to go for him, not getting a dog. And she's like, it's fine. We're going to get the magic wishing stone and we can have a dog on the cloud that we ride around on.
Is the stone in the tree?
The fairy's going to give it to her when she captures the fairy.
The fairy's in the tree.
Process.
The fairy knows where the magic wishing stone is located at some remote location.
Or just carries it around all the time. That part's not exactly
we clear. Don't know.
Oddly, having spoken about this to her for at least 46 hours, I'm still not 100% clear on the details. I zone out a bit.
And you shouldn't, and she's not concerned, so why should you be, you know, don't nail it down, Mom. It's imagination.
I have another slight downside of imagination, and I want to talk about it right after this.
Margaret, exciting news. I am about to have a new baby nephew. And believe it or not, this will be my 13th nephew.
Amy, you're ready to give up your amateur status. You're a pro aunt at this yes. point.
Our family has seen a lot of babies. And as soon as they start standing or walking, I send them all a whole lot of Pampers Cruisers 360.
Pampers Cruisers 360 don't have ordinary diaper tabs. Instead, they have a unique 360-degree stretchy waistband that moves with your newly mobile little one.
Pampers Cruisers 360 offer a gap-free fit that is up to 100% leak-proof, crucial once your baby is quite literally up and at 'em. And that gap-free fit helps prevent your baby from taking off their diaper, a habit you do not want them to get into.
You can say that again. And Pampers Cruisers 360 just got even better with a new blowout barrier. Need we even elaborate on the need for that, friends? For trusted protection, trust Pampers, the number one pediatrician recommended brand.
Download the Pampers Club app today and earn Pampers cash. Then redeem your Pampers cash for exclusive Pampers coupon savings and rewards.
Only redeemable via Pampers Club. Pampers cash has no cash value. Amy, you know me well enough to know that my daily power breakfast is toast with peanut butter on top.
Toast with peanut butter. It's also, by the way, one of my favorite power breakfasts. So we agree on that thing.
We were recently together and we shared some toast with peanut butter. And I'm going to tell you, we used Hero Bread. It adds even more protein and fiber to that combo without adding any more sugar.
Hero Bread has remade the carby, empty calorie bread products into versions that include no net carbs, 0 gram sugar, and fewer calories, plus more protein and fiber, while still being super fluffy and delicious. I was not sure that particular combination was going to be possible, but Hero Bread has figured it out.
Yeah, this is one I'm glad they let us try. It's like, it really tastes good. I've been trying to add more protein to my diet, and I would have thought that a hamburger rolls was not the place to do that, Amy. But all of Hero Bread's products, from rolls to tortillas to croissants, we please, offer protein and fiber, 0 to 1 grams of net carbs and 0 grams of sugar.
Start your Hero Bread bundle on their website and get 10% off your order. Go to hero.co and use the code MOTHERHOOD at checkout.
I like this bread, people. It's HERO.CO and code MOTHERHOOD for 10% off your order of Hero Bread.
Okay, so you have told us that all the doctors at the University of your imaginary state of Oregon do not feel concerned about imagination.
No, it's a good thing,
but
you're here to say, except when?
Well, I think it can be problematic in the early years of elementary school that it gets in the way of learning for some kids I actually know.
Mm-hmm.
That like, they're trying to teach them math and they're like, but my pencil is speaking to me about the magical land where unicorns fly.
Yeah. Yeah. There's sort of spaces and places, as you would say. And right. I guess if your kid kind of can't leave that on the play deck, then there might be a little bit of a play deck. Is that a New York City thing? Playground, you guys would call it. We call it a play deck because it's on the roof of the building.
Yeah. That's only New York City. You're like on the play slab. The exactly. Joy slab.
The black top, the cracked black top my children play on?
No. That your kids are like, we have no imagination because we only have a play slab.
But let's talk about, like, I want to get back to this sort of isolation thing you suggested, because I guess it could be a problem in the classroom. But the imaginative kid from fiction that springs to mind for me is Harriet the Spy. Did you read Harriet the Spy? I mean, my favorite. I love this book so much.
Is Harriet the Spy an Oldie Locks alert?
Back in my day.
Well, they made a movie. You know what? Even the movie's an Oldie Locks alert.
I think
Harriet the Spy is an Oldie Locks alert. And if you haven't read it, read it. I mean, read it and then your kid should read it. This book, I mean, I love this book so much. Harriet is just a girl who's out of pace with her, I think, fifth grade companions. But it was written in, I think, the 70s. So fifth grade feels a little younger then. She's 11 or 12. And the book starts with her in the backyard of her brownstone. She lives in New York City with her friend Scout, I think his name is. And they're playing town. And she's like, this is town. This is how you play. And he's sort of like, what are you talking about? She's like, this stick is the barber. And, you know, he has a drinking problem. And over here are this is the church, but nobody goes there. And this is this. And she's explaining to her friend how all these like dirt and sticks and rocks is town. And let's play town as I do every day. And her friend is sort of like, I don't really get this. And it's sort of a metaphor for what the whole book is going to be about, that her friends are growing up and she doesn't want to grow up. She wants to stay in this, you know, hyper creative place that she's in. And I do think that can happen as kids get older. Most kids stop doing this and some kids don't. Should we talk about the kids who kind of keep going with the super creative stuff? So Joshua Krish wrote an article for Fatherly about why some kids are really, really imaginative. I'll put it up on our show page at whatfreshhellpodcast.com. And you can also swipe or tap and whatever you're using to listen. And we'll put up all the links to what we're talking about. Anyway, he says that researchers say that only about 10% of kids go into complex world building activities. They call it world play.
Mm.
And this is Harriet the Spy playing town. Michelle Root Bernstein, so she does a deep dive on kids who are kind of, you know, older and still doing this after all this time.
I mean, I'm just still having the perspective that, like, wow, there's a lot of people out there studying this. I'm impressed.
Studying imagination. Yeah, exactly. So she says world play is the repeated evocation of a fully realized imaginary place, usually inhabited by imaginary beings.
That's my daughter with the fairies and the magic wishing stone.
And the difference between world play and make-believe, this is what Krish explains in this Fatherly article, is scale. Like, make-believe would be like if you just played town for a day, and world play is when this is what you want to play every day.
That's the fairy tree.
Yeah, the fairy tree. And kids, as they get a little older, the kids who are really into world play will start with maps and languages and, you know, sort of backstories for the characters. One of my kids... Our dog's name is Marshmallow, and he drew this map.
Oh, Amy, how dare you? We all know Marshy.
Everybody knows
that.
And he wrote, he made a map, like a world map of Marshmallow Landia, and everything was like, you know, islands and this. It was all named after her. Mm. And he drew a whole like geographic landscape that he still has up on his bulletin board. And that was, I mean, he's very creative. So that's where he went one day. I'm glad we're not talking about Marshmallowlandia all the time, but some kids do this. So.
But does this roll into like Dungeons and Dragons and that kind of stuff?
I think it does, or Sims, or part of the idea that I think we need to sort of explore is this idea that like you're imaginative when you're a kid, and then it needs to stop at some point, right? Like there are some people who are really into these imagination things as grownups, and we also, I mean, we use our imaginations all the time. Like we see a rainbow in the sky and we're like, oh, rainbow. And we imbue it with meaning that it doesn't really have, right? We still engage in these sometimes superstition, sometimes religions, fanciful. Like we still do things that way.
Right. And I think it's easy to demonize the side of the equation that is like the person trying to stop imaginativeness. But I sometimes find myself on that side of it, which is like, we don't want to talk about your magic wishing stone and the cloud that it's going to take us to 24 hours a day. It's not interesting to everybody else. So like, yes, you can have imagination, but as part of this family, you cannot dominate the conversation with this. My other kid, obsessed with Marvel movies, and his brother and he, I have had to pass a rule at the dining room table that like, we are not going to talk about Marvel movies and what happened in them and the Marvel universe every night at the dinner table, because it is not interesting to the rest of us. Like,
yeah.
We don't really want you to get lost in that world. We still want you to participate in our world, you know?
I think that's right. The idea that kids have to learn that it's, there are places for it and places not for it. And that can be painful. Like Harriet the Spy, she has a painful journey in that book to realize that the way she wants to do things is not how the world works.
Right. And I mean, I think it's like, when you look at like lore and legend, there's like the Narcissus in the water and the mirror in Harry Potter that you get lost looking into. Like, we do have this idea that like, you don't want to go down literal Alice in Wonderland. Like, you don't actually want to spend your life down a rabbit hole, you know?
Except that J.K. Rowling, if you want to be a hyper creative adult, I guess I'm coming at it the wrong way. You can't make your kid into somebody who will be a hyper creative adult by like making them do this. You either have this,
right,
sort of,
you
part
have it
of
or
you,
you
or
don't.
You don't.
Absolutely.
But the kids who do have this grow up to be hyper creative. Like, there are, you know, many examples. The Bronte sisters, I guess, used to sit around and pretend that there was a town, or Oliver Sacks or Jack Kerouac. There are a lot of examples of these people being sort of living in their mind and creating these worlds, and then they grew up to be hyper creative. I got a study for you.
All right, study me, because I feel like we're at a lost crossroads here.
So in 2006, this is a study that Michelle Root Bernstein did. She's the one who specifically researches the creation of imaginary worlds. So she studied MacArthur Fellows versus typical undergraduates.
MacArthur Fellows is like people who get awards for being super creative.
Yeah, they get the MacArthur Genius Grant. I should have looked up exactly what this is, but they give out maybe $2,000 a year.
Just picture like Lin-Manuel Miranda got one.
Lin-Manuel
right?
Miranda
like
got a
famous writers
MacArthur
get them.
Grant.
It's but for so people who are super creative.
It's for people who are super creative, but not necessarily in the arts. I mean, some are in the arts, mm-hmm, and some are like entomologists in the Amazonian rainforest.
Right.
You can be a scientist. You could be Elon Musk. I don't know. Like, you're super creative in some way.
Okay.
And MacArthur Fellowship recipients were like 25 times more likely to have been like this as a kid than the typical undergraduate at this college, to have said, oh yeah, I totally did this world play. I made maps for my fairy world.
Right.
Like I said, you can't make it happen, but there are good things.
Right. So it's an indicator, but it's not a cause. Like that study does not say, talk to your kids more about their fairy world.
Right. And they also said, and she's careful to say, that world play does not invariably lead to your kid being a genius as an adult.
Right.
But it does indicate a flowering of their imagination that we don't have to worry about pushing back against, except to the extent that it's all they want to talk about. I think in that discomfort of like your friends, like, why are you talking only about the magic wishing stone? Like, that was fifth grade. Now we're talking about who likes who. And
well, that is something that I argue vociferously for, which is letting your kid be a little bit nerdier and letting your kid not have a million friends in middle school is fine. Because I think some of this, and I fight this instinct a little bit myself sometimes, which is like, you know, when my kids are hurt and they're like, people call me weird and like, you know, I don't like it. And like, someone called me a weirdo because I was talking about whatever my imaginary obsession was at the playground instead of the cool stuff that other kids were talking about. I try to encourage the like, that's okay. It's okay to be weird. I mean, I was a kid who believed in things that perhaps other kids had given up on into very late grades, you know, and it didn't exactly make me a winner in the game of middle school life. Let's just say that. And I look back and I'm like, that's great. Like, being on the cutting edge is not necessarily where you want to be in middle school. Like, the smartest, hippest, most jaded kid in middle school. Like, that's the kid who thrives socially often in middle school. Especially if you're not an athletic kid. Like, athletic kids tend to thrive, but like, I don't have an athlete in the house. So like, that's out. And so letting your kids be a little bit, you know, behind the curve in terms of being hip and popular, giving up their imaginations, I would encourage you to have them do that.
It's interesting. You were just saying that you don't have to be on the cutting edge in middle school. And the truth is, you are on the cutting edge in middle school, right? Like, Harriet the Spy is a total badass, but, and the rest of her friends are like, quit acting weird, start acting normal. It's like this sort of tamping down of what makes
right, but that's your adult perspective, which I always have a problem with. Because when my kid's like crying and being like, everyone thinks I'm weird, I'm like, being weird is the best. But he does not have that perspective. Right. And it's very important for me to remember that he will not have that perspective as a fourth grader when he's like, oh my God, I drew this crazy dragon. And people are like, dragons are lame. We're into something else now. Like, that experience is genuinely difficult for him. And I can't be like, you're actually the coolest kid ever. Like, he doesn't see it that way.
There's one other sort of slight downside to watch out for in kids who have highly developed imaginations. This was a correlation I had not really considered. Dr. Robin Alter, she studies kids with anxiety. Mm. And she has discovered that, she says, the children who come to see me for anxiety all typically share one common characteristic. These are children gifted with highly active and developed imaginations.
Yeah.
It's a chicken and egg thing for sure, right? Like, they have their imaginative because they're anxious and they're considering possibilities all the time.
Right. But they're anxious because they can imagine all of the different.
Yeah. If you think leprechauns are in the radiator, then maybe you that makes you more anxious.
Yeah.
I don't know. But I had never thought about that connection before, and yet it totally makes sense.
Well, I think there's a connection too between intelligence and imagination, and there's a connection between intelligence and anxiety, because you've thought of the possibilities while everyone else is like, I'm in third grade. What? You're like, guys, listen to me, climate change or whatever. Like, you're kind of seeing a bigger picture than some of the other kids, and naturally your anxiety is more heightened. All right, I have another insight on this after the break.
More and more you hear about the importance of electrolytes as part of staying hydrated, because you need the sodium and the potassium, not just the water. And whether you're looking to hydrate during a workout, while traveling, or at the end of a long night, Sports Research Hydrate Electrolytes have got you covered with over 65 trace minerals, 7 essential vitamins, and coconut water powder.
Crisp and refreshing and without any sugar, this is hydration powered by Sports Research. They're little packets you can just grab and take with you to mix into your water bottle on the go. My favorite flavor so far, Amy, gotta be the cherry pomegranate.
Interesting. My high schooler likes the lemon lime, and she keeps a few handy in her backpack for days that she has practice after school. These electrolytes have the sodium and the potassium that you need to go with it in the optimal ratio for daily hydration.
Visit sportsresearch.com and use code WHATFRESH at checkout for 50% off your purchase of Hydrate.
That's Sports Research, SportsResearch, sportsresearch.com, and use code WHATFRESH for 50% off your Hydrate electrolytes order.
Hello, Hellions. You know we listen to a lot of podcasts that aren't our own, and today we want to tell you about a podcast that really speaks to us and will speak to any parent of a child with special education needs.
The podcast is called Understood Explains. This season of the show is hosted by teacher and special education expert Juliana Ortube, and it's all about how to navigate individual education plans, also known as IEPs.
The latest season of Understood Explains covers topics like how to tell if your child needs an IEP, and it busts common myths about special education. One of my kids has an IEP, and I found this podcast so validating and so helpful. I feel better equipped to advocate for my child's educational needs now.
This podcast is helpful for parents in many different situations, whether your child already has an IEP or you're just starting to wonder if they might need extra support in the classroom. Juliana has content for kids of all ages and for kids who are learning English as an additional language as well.
To listen to Understood Explains, search for Understood Explains in your podcast app. That's Understood Explains.
Okay, so we have with us today Nancy Wilson, my mom. We're going to get to the bottom of my imaginary friends and what they were all about. Mom, tell me what you remember about Kathy and Susie.
I believe you were, say, 2.5 to 3.5, and you just suddenly started talking about these friends. And how it would be is you would tell us, like, oh, I went to the store with Kathy and Susie, or Kathy and Susie came over. It would be your way of telling us a story of something that you had done or wished you had done, I guess. And they were your constant companions.
And they were, it was always a pair. They were always together?
Always, yes. As we recall, you always mentioned the two names together. Yep.
Was one of them a troublemaker? Did they have personalities, or were they just sort of, were they like just there for me?
I couldn't remember, and Dad couldn't either. Any, you know, you're describing them as mischievous. It was just like they were your friends. They were the people that you did things with.
Did I have friends, or was it Kathy and Susie?
You were our oldest child. You were the oldest cousin. You have many cousins, but you were the first. And even among our friends, you were the first child. And at the time that you started this, we were living in New Jersey. We really weren't around family, except on weekends. But anyway, I think that you really kind of invented them just to be your companions. You had a little brother by that point, but he wasn't yet able to really communicate with you.
He was not very useful to me. And where did Kathy and Susie, where did the names come from? Where did I pull those out of?
You know, we've never been able to figure that out. I don't know whether it was maybe a story that we read to you or something like that, or you were an avid Sesame Street fan, so maybe it was children that you saw on Sesame Street. We've never really been able to figure that out. And I guess because you were so young, you weren't really able to describe them to us. We did talk to you about them, but you never really were able to give us a good description, other than they were your friends.
Do you think that I knew that they were imaginary, or do you think that I really on some level thought that they were real?
You know, that's a good question. I'm not sure. You may have known they were imaginary, and yet I think to your 2 to 3 year old mind, they seemed very real.
Yeah, I guess when you're 2 and 3, right, if there's fairies and Santa and everything, like, why not, right? It's all real. Everything's possible.
Exactly. I was trying to kind of figure out how it resolved. When you turned 4, we moved, but you also started to preschool. And so then you did have, you know, real children that you could talk about and tell us what you were doing with them and all that kind of thing. But you always enjoyed playing with the Fisher-Price toys. And of course, that was when they were like the little people, just those little teeny things, not very real looking at all. But, you know, you had the farm and the school and the house, and you did a very imaginative play with those and kind of directed your brother and some of his little friends, and you would have these scenarios going on and all this kind of interaction. And that, to me, seemed to be kind of how you played out your imaginary friend thing.
Uh-huh.
Led to creativity, uh-huh, as far as I was concerned, a very creative spirit, so.
Did any of your other children have imaginary friends?
You know, Dad and I spoke about that last night because I was trying to recall. We could not think of it. We could not remember that they did. So, yours, as soon as you asked me the names, they came to me immediately. But I don't remember the others having them. Maybe because there were more around the house.
You know, yeah, there were other kids around. Well, the craziest thing about it all is that the only things that I remember or know today about Kathy and Susie are the things that you tell me. I have no recollection of this at all, and yet they were for a time my dearest friends.
Yes. Well, as I say, you were quite young, because we just figured, say, you know, you were able to speak well, so you were probably like 2.5. But then by the time you got to 3.5 to 4, they kind of went off into the sunset, I guess you could say.
Farewell, Kathy and Susie.
Yes, they moved on to some other little girl's life.
Something I think a lot about in this, which I think is a very helpful perspective, is I was reading a book about kids with like severe autism. And the idea is like maybe a kid with severe autism sits and like spins something all day. Mm-hmm. Like that's all they want to do, all they want to do. And the orientation was always like, we have to stop getting him to spin the thing so that he will come join our world, you know, this exciting world that we have. And so therefore, like, take away all the spinning things. And of course, all that resulted in was like an extremely anxious,
agitated
child. And the metaphor that the person used is like, what if you're sitting in the park reading like Catcher in the Rye, J.D. Salinger, and somebody walks up to you and slaps that book out of your hand and it's like, J.D. Salinger's lame. We're going to go to the movies. And it's like, because you want that person to go to the movies with you. It's like, of course, that's not going to result in a successful interaction. And so that your orientation needs to be accessing that person so that the thing you want to do is sit down next to them for as long as it takes, days at a time, and read Franny and Zoe, another J.D. Salinger book. And that eventually, like, maybe that person looks at you and is like, hey, we're doing the same thing. Maybe there's a connection to be made here. And that eventually the metaphor works to, like, you can then leave and be like, hey, let's go see there's a movie that reminds me of these books. Let's go see it together. That, like, that is the path to accessing people. And I think there is something, although it's about, you know, very unreachable people, I think of that metaphor constantly in my own life.
Right.
Like, and I think of it with my imaginative child who, like, honestly, if I never talked about the Wishing Stone again, it would be too soon. Like, I don't really want to do it. But, and she's a fairly easy to access child, so I don't really need it with her. But my kid, who is Marvel obsessed, is a little bit harder to access. And so to sit down with him and have a 45-minute conversation is very, very easy if I'm willing to talk about Marvel. And so, but I'm building from there. It's like, can we crawl out of that and talk about, you know, bigger things or other things happening in his day? Yes, we can. So to start with Marvel, to join him in his imagination, like, that's why that story about your dad is so sweet. Like, it's such a bond for him to be like, come on, Amy and I drive it around the neighborhood looking for our imaginary friend. Like, it's adorable.
It's kind of no different from how we understand now we're supposed to help people with Alzheimer's, right? Which isn't to say constantly,
yes.
No, Uncle Joe isn't here. It's
your husband is dead, Marie. Like, oddly, that doesn't
right.
work great.
You meet them where they are and you say, oh, okay, I think he'll be back in a little while. That kind of thing. You meet people where they are.
Or, I mean, there's the famous thing, and now I think it's actually in use, but there's a town, and of course, like, some progressive.
Danish. Yeah,
Norway,
yeah, I've seen this.
Say, like, somewhere where they do everything right online, you know? And it's like, for people with memory issues and stuff, because they found that, like, people would just get up, like, in the morning and be like, oh my God, I have to get to work. And they're like, yep, there you go. There's your briefcase. And it's just like a cardboard briefcase. It doesn't open. There's nothing in it. But they're like, here's your office. And, like, they would just literally go mm-hmm. through the motions of going. And it's very soothing. And then you can talk, how are you feeling today? Any aches or pains? Like, you can access the information you actually need from them if they are sitting at their office doing their work. Like, they're going through the motion of what calms them.
So Dr. Alter, she's the one who works with the anxious kids who are usually also very, very creative. It's one thing, like, your daughter wants to talk about the magic wishing stone and she has no problem. Like, it's awesome. And it's also working for her. It's not something that's keeping her awake at night, right? If you have a kid.
Right. Well, yeah, not yet. We'll see how it develops.
Not until there's leprechauns in the radiator, then who knows?
So if
she has a kid who comes to her who's somewhat motivated to put some kind of, I don't know, some guardrails on their imagination, which has to come from the kid at some point, she teaches them first that their imagination is a great gift, that they've been, you know, gifted with this incredible flowering thing, but it has to have controls on it. And guess what? Just like you learn to ride a bike, and you learn to steer, and you learn to brake, and now you're in control of the bike, and it takes you where you want to go. you can control your imagination.
This is a great, great conversation.
Yeah. And yeah. And she gets into it like that. And then of course, there are breathing exercises and, you know, meditation exercises. There's a whole program she takes these kids through. But I really like that metaphor. Like, you can be in charge of this. This would also work for a kid who has temper tantrums, right? Like, you can be in control of this thing that feels like it's in control of you. And we're going to teach you how.
Right. And I think I've done some thinking and looking about stuff like this. And there's something that happens with some kids where it's like, someone's telling me what to do. And that's very scary for parents because they're like, oh my God, like my kid has a demon. They're possessed or whatever. But that it's actually a fairly classic manifestation for kids to be like, someone's telling me what to do. And I had a kid who would say kind of things like that. And it has become like, I can't help it. What he's really trying to say is, I feel out of control of this. And so one of the things that we've talked to him about is this metaphor of, like, because he's a TV movie guy, when he's anxious, it's like, let's change the channel. Think about a channel changer. Think about a remote control where you're nervous and scared of, like, whatever. Of course, summer movies, we're in the phase of summer movies where the superhero movies, which, like, 10-year-olds want to go to, the previews are for, like, unbelievably terrifying movies. So, like, we took him to see some superhero movie, and the preview was this, like, really scary shark movie where, like, this crazy gray white shark was, like, eating teenagers and stuff. And he's like, I'm so scared of the shark. And I'm like, you have to change the channel, and let's think of four other things you can change the channel to. And it's a really, like, concrete tool that says, when you see the shark, you're going to change the channel to either this, 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 or this.
That's great. And then he has a menu and he feels like he's in charge.
Yeah. And I mean, listen, whenever we give this advice, it's not like, oh, and now he sleeps like a dream every night and we never hear another complaint.
Right.
Like, we do this every night. You know, we revisit it all the time. He freaks out from the beginning. And then I'm like, remember that you can da-da-da-da-da change the channel, blah, blah.
And if it's a kid who is really interested in imaginative worlds, then I guess you can place more of them in his or her path.
Yeah.
I mean, we've talked a lot about how to put the brakes on this and make it less true. But if it's sort of indubitably a good thing for your kid to be imaginative and creative, then there are also ways that we can help our kids be more imaginative.
Okay.
Can we talk about them?
Sure.
Sounds like some of our kids kind of got it and some of them
need a little boost. I don't think I need any boosting around here, but okay. I'm willing to talk about it.
Open-ended art materials and things like that to play with. Like, the more our kids can play with clay and blocks and paper and crayons instead of building the Lego set that can only do one thing and then has to be put on a shelf and never touched again because it'll break.
Yeah. And that's a little personality-wise. Like, I have a kid who's Lego. He's obsessed with Legos, but he wants to build the thing that looks like that. The joy that he gets from it is, like, box of crazy, and I put it together step by step and end up with Hogwarts Castle. Like, that's what he likes out of it. He's not as gifted at open-ended imaginative play. And so we do some playing like that, but I can definitely see that, like, that's not his mindset.
But he does get a lot of time outside. Your kids get tons of time outside.
Yeah, they get a lot of unstructured time. But all I'm trying to say with this is, like, if you have a kid who does not delight in imaginative play, it is going to be very hard for you to make him that kid.
Yeah, right. But leaning into the, like, oh, fine, here's a screen every time.
Oh, no.
Like, there's nothing to do is also the wrong thing to do. There's a professor, her name is Amber Ankowski, and she says, she's a child psychologist, and she says kids need their imaginations most when there is nothing else to do. So that's sort of one of our, like, top three things. Let kids be bored, because if they've never had to use their imaginations, if you're solving every problem for them, then they won't.
Well, that is absolutely true. And even people with little kids, like, nowadays, every toy is like, it's electronic, it beeps, it boops, it transforms into a spider and tickles them. Like,
that sounds like a scary toy.
Kids do much. I guess that, I'm sorry, I don't know where that came from.
It's your imagination.
I'm very imaginative. But this is a great tip that is, like, counterintuitive. Developmentally, toys that your kid brings all of the imagination to are much, much better than toys that are, like, It beeps, it mm-hmm. whirls, it does a dance. Like, let your kids play with things where they have to make stuff themselves.
And then fiction, than, of course. Yeah. Like, reading your kids' books, getting your kids to read. It is, the struggle is real, right? I have older kids, and they're supposed to be reading for school this summer. And when they can hold a little palm-sized computer in their hand, why would they read a book? But they do. We're made, I mean, that's like 10 pages yeah. a day. Come on, guys. And it helps fictional worlds. They help develop empathy, like we were saying on the episode about empathy. And it certainly helps them create imaginative capacity.
And it helps them go places they don't normally go. Like my fifth grader, his school is always working on a fiction book. So they read it out loud together in class, one chapter, and then you're supposed to read it at home when they get home. It's like they double read it, basically. And the books have been kind of intense. Like, one was about some Danish people escaping the Holocaust, and one was about a kid who lost her father. And, like, they're kind of heavy. I'm like, whoa, here we go. But it we talked about this with Evangeline Lilly. It says to your kid, like, I trust you with this information. You're going to be ready to start handling this stuff. And like, I'm watching these superhero movies with my kid and they're pretty darn intense. You know, like, kids are ready for tough stories and scary stories. They need to start processing that stuff.
They do. And the fiction is worth it. Like, I feel like my kids are being asked to read these sort of serious nonfiction. Like, one of my kids is reading about like somebody in a Russian jail. It's a memoir of like, I spent 30 years in a Russian jail. Like, really? Like, can you just read The Hunger Games? Like, it has to... Right. It's pretty serious. And I guess it's...
Right. But when you say The Hunger Games is about teenagers murdering each other with arrows.
Right. But it's like, oh my God. I mean, but talk about a microcosm that author created and creative. And I'm not saying your 8-year-old should read it, but your 12-year-old should. And it's, I can't put it down. And it inspires creativity, I think.
Yeah. Something I've been thinking about a lot lately in different contexts, but I think it really goes to this, is I was watching Beyonce's Homecoming. You didn't think that was going to come up in today's episode.
That's not an old deluxe alert.
Oh my God. I'm finally not making
You're
it
so hip. Or,
I was watching Beyonce at Coachella, guys, because I'm hip. And then we were watching Project Runway for some reason. And what I took away from it is, like, I feel like historically... Homecoming with African-American people, Project Runway primarily with gay people. The idea that, like, for decades, these people were kind of dismissed and, like, marginalized. And watching the amazing art that comes from people when you're like, okay, go. You know, like, nobody's mashing you down and being like, this is not the way you're supposed to be in the world. Yeah. You're supposed to only fit this crazy box. And... It's both projects to me. I looked at them and I was like, these are the expressions of imaginations that historically you kind of haven't been able to see because they weren't welcome in the world. And they both, the like beautiful, amazing, imaginative fashion and this like unbelievable music and expression of Homecoming. It's like meeting people where they are and seeing the results of like their own expression and imagination is such an amazing gift. And it made me think of that when we were having this whole conversation.
I guess if there's a takeaway, it's that it's not our job as the parent to tamp down on it, to worry about it and make them fit the crazy box, as you said, that the world's going to do that for them. And maybe that's a little painful, but that's part of growing up.
It takes some real bravery, though, because it's easy to say that in a pat way.
Sure.
But when you have the kid you have a boy who's wearing dresses, you have a kid who is still dressing as Woody when he's 9 years old in the school costume parade, you have a kid who is really differently expressing themselves. I mean, I say this all the time. People are always like, my kid's so weird. And I'm like, your kid wears like a Mick Jagger t-shirt.
That's you,
that's
right.
That's not weird.
That's imposed upon
the kid.
That's
cool.
Yeah.
Let's talk about weird. Like, weird is the kid who really is like the girl who wears like the hot dog in the princess parade. Like, everyone's looking at the parent and being like, what's wrong with your kid? And everyone's looking at the kid and being like, what's wrong with you? Like, it's easy to say, like, let it flourish. But we recognize that it can mean something very uncomfortable for a while.
Well, I guess what I'm trying to say is it's not our job to shut it down, because from almost all kids, this sort of imaginative role play stuff, and it's different, I think, for kids who are on the spectrum and who have that sort of singularity of interest as a sort of, you know, primary feature of their personality. But for most kids, we're talking about like neurotypical kids, even the kids who are into the world play and the maps and the languages and the, you know, leprechauns and the radiators, that starts to go away as they shift from imaginary interactions to peer interactions. Mm-hmm. And by the time you're a teenager, this stuff is gone. And so is all, you know, you will look back fondly on your kid's imaginary friend, even though it might seem like, is there something weird about my 3-year-old that she won't stop talking about Soren Lorenzen? It does change. It does go away. And, you know, then there's this nostalgia you have for it. But I guess I just mean you don't have to be the one to say, you can't wear the hot dog costume. You're weird. You're too old for that now. Don't worry yes. about that. This yeah. sadly self-corrects. And that very imaginative kid, it's proof of their creativity that will probably come out in them in some way. And I think your job is to sort of protect it, not from all the consequences of their still wanting to play town when everybody else is talking about, you know, who's dating who. The world takes care of that, though. You don't have to tamp down on it or worry about it.
Yeah, you don't really, even for non-neurotypical kids, I think it's like the basic takeaway is like, you're really not in control of how this turns out. And so your only job is to meet yeah. your kid where they are. And then help lead them into connection with other people, but never be like, stop doing that weird thing you're doing and do whatever else everyone else is doing, because yeah. you'll be happier. That yeah. doesn't work. It doesn't work. And so just let it go and like help them walk with you.
We solved it.
We definitely solved this one, guys. So we, as always, want to know what is happening. We don't want to know all the details about the Magic Wishing Stone, but we do want to know in general how imagination is playing yeah. out in your house. And you could tell us on our Facebook page, facebook.com/WhatFreshHellCast.
You could go on Instagram, which is also WhatFreshHellCast, and send us pictures of the imaginary friends. That'd be cool.
Amy, I have a spoiler for you. There's going to be no pictures of the imaginary friends. I could probably see them. Norma Nurscher.
This was Research a Go-Go. There's so much interesting books and whatever, and I'm going to put it all up on WhatFreshHellPodcast.com, and I'll link to some of it on Twitter, too, @WFHPodcast.
That's it for us this week, guys. Go enjoy your magic wishing stones.
Go frolic.
We'll talk to you next time. We want to tell you about a daily newsletter for busy moms that we love. It's called The Pickup Line, and it features short recaps of today's big stories, hard news, and lifestyle all in one place.
The Pickup Line is timed to land in your inbox right as you shift into park at school or activity pickup time. This happened to me yesterday. I was in the parking lot of my daughter's musical theater camp, and there it was, right when I actually had a few minutes to catch up on the world.
It even has playlist suggestions and recipe suggestions. This newsletter is so me. It knows what I want to know before I do.
That's amazing.
How does it do that?
It's very good. It's spooky that way. Subscribe to The Pickup Line by texting Pickup Line to 22828 or by visiting thepickupline.net.
When it comes to raising kids, there's so much to consider. Things like, what do we feed them? When do we feed them? How do they sleep? What does it look like to raise kind kids? How does their nervous system work? How do I keep myself calm? What are my triggers? There's so much that comes into play, and we are distilling all of that information for you at Voices of Your Village podcast, where we bring experts in the field of early childhood and education and psychology and across the board so that you don't have to comb the internet for information. You get to show up and hang out and have shame-free, judgment-free conversations and insights into what it looks like to raise kind, empathetic, emotionally intelligent humans. I'm Alyssa Blask Campbell. I have a master's degree in early childhood education. I'm a mom of two, and I am walking this journey right alongside you doing this work. Come hang out with me at Voices of Your Village, and we can dive into real conversations with actionable tips.